Pigweed here. Today we review an IPA and discuss Christianity in the West. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Good evening, Crow Hill.
Good evening, Pigweed.
What is on your mind?
Well, you know, I was in Baltimore, and I wanted to find a local brewery. So I was looking up where I was, and I found this place called the Ministry of Brewing.
Okay.
And I went down to the Ministry of Brewing, which was this little brew shop in an old church. I mean, they had religious paintings up on the walls. There was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know, up iconography around the top of the church. It was a very churchy-like place.
But leftover stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't a church.
The breweries... wasn't playing up the...
No. They apparently bought the old church and just kept a lot of the stuff. And it was actually kind of cool looking.
Well, I mean, how could the church have been available? Aren't there people going, attending church there?
Well,
I mean...
apparently not enough. A lot, especially in cities, you see a lot of old churches that are just empty.
Right.
And sometimes what happens is you have this beautiful old Episcopal building or Catholic building or something, and it's just lost everybody. Right. And then some, you know... Fred and Ethel's Church of Fun comes and buys the place, and then they are there.
Well, but... I mean, at least better that than it fall into such disrepair that it's an eyesore and they tear it down. I guess I'd rather have it repurposed and as you're driving down the street, people can pretend that there's some religious services going on.
A lot of times they're fantastic buildings.
I know,
For example, when we go to... Chili Brew.
Yeah, Chili Brew.
That's in this fantastic Lutheran church.
It's just
this beautiful place. So anyway, it's called the Ministry of Brewing. Uh-huh. And they had Planetary Hazy IPA. I'm usually not a fan of hazy IPAs, and if they had something more to my taste, I would have got it. But they only had like four or five beers in cans, and this was the best one.
It doesn't even have the streak on it. The yeast is Vermont. All right. I
never heard of Vermont yeast. So two-row malt, white wheat, and oats, and Amarillo, Idaho 7, and Galaxy. So that's
all that weedy oaty stuff is responsible for the haziness?
Yeah, probably so, because oats definitely contribute some haziness.
Right, and then a lack of, you know, fining and finishing.
Yes.
So.
All right, it's got a good aroma.
Wow, it's a very nice aroma. Let me see here. We've got... Amarillo, Idaho 7, and Galaxy.
So it's got two things going on. It's a combination of a little bit of the sticky hop flavor, but also a little bit of that. You get some mouthfeel with a hazy IPA. Like, it's almost chewy. You know, there's something to it.
Yes, it's not that sort of clean finish.
Right.
There's a lingering stickiness.
Yeah, it's
in
like
a good way.
Is this beer or is this soup?
You know? that's very good.
Yeah, it is good.
Good job there, Ministry. And was it near Hopkins?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, we need to go up there and have a field trip.
That is a good idea.
It's an interesting place. You know, high ceilings and all that
fermenters.
Yeah, they have the brew stuff right there. But in a church, you usually have these really high ceilings, and it's just kind of a reminder, you're little. you're just a little person in this big place.
That's the point. Well, anywho.
All right, so the decline of religion in the West.
I kept
thinking about the decline and fall of the Roman Empire.
Which, interestingly, he blames on... Gibbons blames on Christianity that the Romans got soft because of Christianity. I think he leaned a little bit too far in that direction for what the cause is. I mean,
there are a lot of
1,000 years is a pretty good run.
And there are a lot of other things going on.
But in decline of the West, we don't mean the Western states. We don't mean the decline in Wyoming.
Nevada, they're doing fine. Yeah, we're talking about Western the decline of religion in Western Europe and in the United States.
Right.
And it's a shame. And there's a lot of different components to this about what's going on.
All right, let's run through some numbers here.
Yeah.
So I have this. These are all Western nations,
right?
And you have church. It's divided into church attending Christians, non-practicing Christians, and religiously unaffiliated.
So
what that means?
Well, just unaffiliated would just say that they, you know, they don't care. They don't.
Yeah.
If they go to the hospital and they say, "What religion are you?" You just say, "None."
I don't care.
Whatever. Right, doesn't matter.
The middle section would nominally consider themselves to be Christians.
Yeah, they might go on Christmas and Easter, but probably not.
When you went to Easter service, was there the Easter crowd?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it bigger than your normal Sunday?
Yes, uh-huh, yeah, yes.
There's always that going on.
I know, yes. The C&E Christians. As a matter of fact, I remember a couple of years ago, there was this one priest who was kind of snarky, and it was Christmas, and there were, you know, all these people there, and he gave his homily, and at the end of the homily, he said, "See you Easter."
Burn. That's pretty good. Yeah. I remember in high school, we as a family were no longer attending church at the time. And somebody from Young Life asked me if I was a Christian. Now, what did they mean?
Right. Well, exactly. That's very different.
Now, they meant...
Well, they meant, have you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior?
Yes, exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, what, I look like a Muslim? Right? It's like, what are my choices here?
What do you mean, am I a Christian? Of course, I'm not Jewish, and I'm not a Muslim.
So I think that's what this middle section here is. They're just like, well, yeah.
Well, of course I'm a Christian.
You go to church every Sunday? I didn't say all that. But so anyway, here we are. What do we have? Who the biggest... The two nations, there's no surprise at who's the most churches.
Ireland and Italy, both solidly Catholic places.
But they're still not impressive.
Portugal, Austria, which surprises me a little bit, but Ireland, Italy, and Portugal are the places where you've got...
Between 30 and 40.
Yeah,
you got a lot. And then it's the Scandinavians, no surprise here, they're in the 9s and 10s.
Very, very low, right.
You've got that big chunk. Now, your non-practicing Christians are, what, 50s and 60s?
Yeah.
And then
the religiously unaffiliated. So you got a whole lot of them. Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Belgium. Right. No, just another reason not to like the Belgians.
So,
everybody picks on the Belgians.
Yeah, so here we've got, some kind of sad numbers.
Yeah.
And some of these are
countries with national churches. You know, the UK has a national church. Mm-hmm. Denmark has a national church, I'm pretty sure. That doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Gosh, UK, 18.
18%, that's pretty bad.
Churchgoers.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah, that's rough. Now, there was, the Pew Research came up with some numbers not long ago that ended up a book called The Rise of the Nuns.
Yeah.
And this is the time of the new atheists and all of them talking about, a third of people who were, even Southern Baptists,
right,
who were raised in the church,
mm-hmm,
don't go to church when they're as an adult.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people not going to church. And that, you know, that could be a show in and of itself, is why aren't people going to church? Because there's a lot of things the church is not doing.
Yeah. Yeah. What, right. Yes. What is the... Because you've got what sort of outside forces are causing this?
Yes.
And what sort of...
Inside forces,
right.
Yes.
Unforced errors are taking
exactly.
place in the church
That's right.
themselves to
That's right. There's a lot of screwball stuff going on in the church, and people just say, I don't want this.
Yeah, there was a Babylon Bee that said, a church who believes all of the things that non-churchgoers believe wonders why they're struggling for attendance.
Right.
It's like, well, what? Right. You don't.
Why do you go to church to hear what you could just as well hear on Oprah?
Yes. Exactly. Just,
that's not why you go to church.
Right. You don't get together and message your sermon. All right. What do the people want to hear?
Yes. I heard this great story about Andrew Jackson left the White House and went to some church in D.C. And the preacher got up and was given a hellfire and brimstone sermon, and he said, and Andrew Jackson will go to hell like any other man unless he repents.
Yeah, see?
And then afterwards,
that's church with balls.
Andrew Jackson went up and shook his hand and said, "I wish I had, you know, men with your courage in my administration."
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the kind of church that people say, okay, at least you're standing for something.
Right. Yeah. So many science-minded people would say, well, that's good. right? I mean, why, isn't it good to have fewer superstitious people and more science-minded people focusing on reason and rationality? And in a sense, if you look at the trajectory of Northern Europe,
mm-hmm.
or the West in general, its prosperity is in direct correlation, or what do they call that, decorrelation, yeah, or whatever,
right.
You know, with religiosity.
Yes.
So as people have gotten less religious, we drew these two lines.
Yeah.
Look, our lifestyles have improved.
Yes. So prosperity tends to go up as religiosity goes down, generally speaking.
Well, but, that's a solid argument.
Well, yeah. So there's another way to look at this, which is that the Enlightenment concept sort of turned God into an object, sort of turned God into a thing, like the planet Mercury, you know,
okay.
And then said, well, let's look around for evidence of this thing called God, and we don't see it, so therefore we don't need God. And that was just a wrong-headed way to look at the whole concept of God.
Right.
Not
initially. I mean, right. I think it's trended that way. I wouldn't say, you know, Copernicus and
right. Yeah. Well, you know, all the early astronomers had to go, because the only place to build a telescope was on the top of the churches, and the churches actually sponsored and encouraged scientific exploration. That's a big myth about church and science,
right.
Is the churches encouraged all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there did develop an attitude over time.
But the major figures of the time,
yeah.
were still believers.
Yeah, like Isaac Newton was
he was
a weird believer, but he was a believer.
God,
he was a weird
guy.
Very strange.
Best scientist we've ever had.
Yes.
But
there was a Pigweed and Crow Hill episode on Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah,
go back and listen to it.
Yeah,
strange guy. But yes, so there were a lot of believers early on in the Enlightenment, but there became this...
But it had laid the foundation,
yes.
for what you'll later see.
Yeah, and yes. I think the foundation that it laid was viewing the whole question of religion and God and church and everything else, putting it in the same sort of category as scientific exploration.
Right.
And that was the fundamental,
yes.
problem that,
yes.
caused the sort of decline that we see, where people are now thinking of God as an object, or, you know, like, for example, is God in the same category as Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, or is God in the same category as, you know, math and the laws
truth
of physics?
Or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you put God in the same category as Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, you're going to get one kind of an answer.
Or you ask, is God real the way that this microphone is real?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yes.
No. So, okay. So he's not real. Then.
Yes.
Discussion's over.
Exactly. That's
yeah.
the kind of problem you run into.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
So in the New Atheists.
Yeah.
Daniel Dennett, Sam
Hitchens,
Harris,
Dawkins. Right.
I was a big fan of those guys.
Yeah.
And here we've got Sam's book. I think this is 2005. Yes, 2005. The End of Faith articulates the dangers and absurdities of organized religion so fiercely and fearlessly. Right. So. The name of the title of the book is The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. He trying to argue that we can reason our way to more morality.
Yes.
Reason-based morality that will replace the superstition-based morality.
Yes.
And I was all in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's one of those things where you're all in because you want it to be true.
Yes, not because it actually is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a big problem.
And Cassius, I love the idea.
Yeah, sure. Wouldn't it be lovely if we could create a society based on something that was accessible to everybody?
Yeah.
Logic and reason, and if we could all just reason our way into the perfect thing. But that's just nothing works that way. And that's not the way human society functions.
No, it's not the way human society functions. How about the A Guide to Spirituality Without Religion? This is also another Sam Harris.
Yeah. Well, he's really into meditation.
Right, so yeah. He's like, you know, this neuroscience and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. all working. Okay, you know.
Yeah, I'm like all that. For all that stuff. I mean, I like all the research that, like, John Vervaeke does on this kind of topic, and there's some other people who are doing really interesting studies into the intersection between science and religion, and it's fascinating stuff, and I love it. It's very interesting, but don't coming to the conclusion that you can therefore, through reason, replace religion. That's sort of that's what we're getting from the Enlightenment. That's sort of the end of the Enlightenment. Jordan Peterson recently said the Enlightenment experiment has failed and it's over.
Oh.
The Enlightenment experiment was we can figure everything out by reason and create a just society and replace God and all this kind of stuff. And he's saying it's over. It's clearly wrong. Mm-hmm. Now we have to move on and figure something else
out. But I think that is the inevitable arc of the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Originally, it was God gave us reason to help us make sense of the world and even to get to know him better.
Yes. And that's the attitude you see in a lot of, like, Thomas Paine and these other writers around the time of the American Revolution. You see a lot of this very rational approach to religion because God gave us reason so that we could figure these things out.
Yeah.
And you have the rational Bible and other things coming out at that time. So, yes, you're right that early on the intent was they weren't attacking God. They were saying God gave us reason, but we're going to kind of reject all the things that we can't find a reason for.
Yeah, and that's where we've gone south.
Yes.
And so back to wanting things to be true, it seems like that's the way with most liberalism. It's like, contrary to the facts,
yes.
or without even know, or even, or otherwise, without knowing what the consequences are going to be.
Yeah.
I like this idea. I like if we get rid of police and prisons, crime will go down. I love the idea.
Yeah.
Right?
If sure, that, wouldn't that be nice?
If that were...
Yeah.
Yes. But it flies in the face of the real world.
Yeah.
It reminds... And there's a lot of... Even... Honestly, even from each according to his ability and to each according to his... It's not a terrible idea.
No, sure. It
as
sounds
long
nice.
As long as you say... So as long as nobody abuses the system, which is pretty much everybody.
Which is every time, everybody, every time.
Every time. So it's wanting the idea where when you look at religion is the time-tested history of how we interact since forever.
Yeah.
And now reason has gotten in the way and you're like, well, why can't we do completely the opposite thing? And have it work out even better. Probably will be better. Based on what? You have nothing. And then it falls on its face. And the thing is, you won't... Hopefully, we'll get to some point here soon where we'll go, you know what? That old religion thing wasn't so bad after all, was it?
Yeah. So the idea that you're able to reason yourself into the... Kind of reminds me of the situation where a kid comes to a parent and they... You know, why? You know, you should, it's time to go to bed. Why? Well, because of this. Why? Well, because of this. Why? You know, it comes to a point. You just say, because I said so. You know, you run out of reasons after a certain amount of time.
Yes. And now that God has lost the authority to say, I said so, there's nothing to stop human beings from just saying, well, then I'll just do what I want.
Yes.
And if you were a parent and you go, all right, do what you want and see how that goes for you. And,
yeah.
You sleep whenever you want. The front door is wide open.
Yeah.
Leave when you want.
So I thought I would go through a list of things I was thinking that religion kind of, things that religion provides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so provides a system of values, provides a sense of purpose, sexual and reproductive norms, social cohesion and identity, authority and social order. It provides coping mechanisms. A lot of people who are, you know, borderline with their emotions and things, they find a way to cope with that from religion. There's a focus on family life. And there are social support systems, especially for young families. You know, religions, a lot of times if you're active in a church and somebody's going through a hard time, the church people will come together and make you meals and do other kinds of things.
Right.
So religion does a lot of those kind of things. And somebody like Sam Harris could come along and say, well, why can't, you know, rationality do this? Well, okay, Sam, where is it happening?
Yeah.
Where?
Certainly it could. So you want to build, you think that you can build a rational, skeptical community to provide all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, theoretically,
try.
There's nothing stopping you.
Right.
Where is it being done?
Yes, yes. It's not being done. And the thing is, all those things are incredibly valuable things for society, and religion is the driving factor behind them. And when religion declines, you lose all this stuff. You lose the sense of purpose. You know, why do we have so many more suicides? Why do we have people feeling like they're lost and don't know what's going on?
Well, yeah. All right. Well, let's hold on. Before we do that, remember the show we did on the evolutionary psychology rationale for religion?
Yeah.
Like why? Let's say that there is.
Why did it happen in the first place? Yeah.
Why did it happen in the first place? And why did it happen absolutely everywhere?
Yes.
I think if you go back far enough, there would be competing societies.
Yeah.
Right? When you're and when this idea of religion popped up in those first societies, those societies and outcompeted the other societies. I remember you talking to me about the ideal man,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's somebody who's the leader in your tribe.
Yes.
And he has certain traits which makes him the leader,
which
tend to believe that there's an ideal version of that.
So I like to try to explain this from the perspective of a wolf. Okay. So imagine, because when you think about evolutionary psychology, you have to kind of get out of your modern mindset and all the things you know. When you think about primitive people, let's just think about a wolf instead.
Right.
So with wolves, you've got a leader of the pack,
right?
And the wolves follow that leader, but they also know that that leader is supposed to be a certain way, right? So the wolf has two things in his mind at the same time.
Right. There's a reason he's the leader.
Yes. Right. So, but he has two things in his mind at the same time. On the one hand, that's the leader that we have, but he's a leader because he conforms to this concept of leader. Right?
Yes.
And once he stops conforming with that concept of leader, it's time for a couple of the rest of us to take him out and have a new leader. Right? So the wolf has two things going on in his mind at the same time. Here's the practical guy that we're following right now. But he also has this almost like an archetype in his mind. Obviously, I'm personalizing the wolf to a ridiculous extent. But he's got this archetype in his mind of what a leader is supposed to be that he applies as a judge against a particular leader. So that if he gets out of line, we take him out and we replace him. So there's
a concept of leaderness in a kind of Platonic way.
Exactly, right? Exactly. There's something like that built into the psychology of the wolf.
Uh-huh.
And as you have any kind of pack or social organization, you have the same sort of thing. You have this concept of what's a father, what's a mother, what's a king, what's a leader, what's a all these concepts that we have where, okay, here's my real mother, but there's also this concept of mother.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my real father, but there's this concept of father. And so in a way, if you take all of those concepts and they become abstracted, and that in a way turns into religion.
Because that's pretty solid.
Yeah. You've now abstracted all these different archetypes of the way things ought to be, and you've said, okay, here's the actual leader, but there is this perfect leader. What is that?
Right.
And here's this father.
He's not and so in an evolutionary psychology way, you would say, it doesn't matter if that, it gets extrapolated into the sky god,
mm-hmm.
But this would happen from the ground up anyway,
yes.
whether or not that sky god actually existed,
exactly.
because the ideal does exist.
Yes. So that
does it exist in the same way that a table exists, right?
Yes.
No, it doesn't. But the ideal does.
Yes. So and that brings up the very disquieting question.
Yeah.
Does it even matter if God exists? Because you have this thing. Does it matter that this ideal concept exists somewhere? What do you mean by exists somewhere?
What do you mean by exists? Right. Yeah. Because again, you know, do you mean the perfect ideal?
That
does exist. Does it exist like a table? No.
It exists in our mind in some way, right? So it clearly has some kind of existence, just like the number one has some kind of existence. But, you know, I can't, like, put the number one on the table and look at it under a microscope.
Yeah.
So anyway,
but the utility of it.
Yes. So that raises the question, is God necessary but not real? Or, I mean, those kinds of weird questions. But anyway, it gets back to this idea that the whole concept of religion and God and these archetypes and these things that we're looking at could develop very naturally just in the normal course of human evolution.
Right. And if you look at the most successful nations in the history of the planet, mm-hmm. they're all Christian nations. So was it instrumental? Of course it was. Mm-hmm. Was it have utility? Of course it did.
I have a friend's voice yelling in my mind, what about China?
Well, has China had an impressive history?
Yes.
Yes. Is it impressive right now?
I don't know.
Yeah. In some ways, yes. Malevolent, evil way.
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. Yeah. So we have this thing about what, the cultural, remember you were talking about on these charts here, you had the church attending Christians and the non-practicing Christians. You saw that thing about Dawkins recently.
Exactly. No, I just got it circled here. Okay. I wanted to make sure we circled back to that before we, you know, move on any further.
Right.
Yes, the cultural Christian. So here, this is a
one
guy.
One of the four horsemen of the apocalypse here. Yeah.
Yes, one of the most
anti-religious.
Anti-religious.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dawkins is a brilliant man.
Yeah.
And has done great work. He's a genius, no question about it. But when he talks about religion, sometimes I think he's a dumbass.
However, the mind virus idea is the idea that religion is so valuable mm-hmm. to the development of a society that it would spread like a virus.
Yes.
It's not a bad, that's a solid analogy.
Well, so that's the origin of the concept of the meme. We think of memes as those little pictures.
No, he invented the meme.
He invented the meme, yes. Yeah. And he didn't mean these little pictures.
Yes, cute jokes on Twitter.
That's not what he meant. The original concept of the meme was something like a gene. Like a gene gets propagated through a creature because it succeeds.
It's helpful and adaptive.
Yes, and a meme would be a mental idea that does the same thing.
Yes,
it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
but I think the problem is that to suggest way too early that it's outgrown its usefulness.
Yes,
and so you know what? It needs to die off, and because it's already served its purpose.
Yeah,
it's created the Great West.
Yeah,
but really, do we need it anymore? Well, let's just see. So he calls himself a cultural Christian.
Yes, because he says if he had to choose between Christianity and Islam, he would choose Christianity every time.
Yeah, he loves the churches. Do I want to get rid of the churches in the beautiful country parish?
And Christmas and Christmas hymns.
And hymns and stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know, when Marx was kicked out of Germany and lived in England, he went to church. He says, well, it's the only place you could hear great Bach. So you know, so he still recognized the beauty and the environment and the music, and he's like, but the question is, can you have Christianity without Christians?
Right. Yeah, and the answer seems to be pretty clearly no.
No, I mean, can
the churches are declining?
How long can you enjoy the beauty of a flower once you've ripped the roots out of it?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
So this idea that. I get that. And so it sort of goes back to the earlier thing I said about high school mm-hmm. as a Christian. Well, of course I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
But so he's going to cheer the decline of church attendance mm-hmm. and yet say, I love living in a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. Well, can you have both of those things?
Well, so what happens is when people are no longer serious about Christianity, then other things come and take the place. And what's happening unfortunately, in England and in Europe is as Christianity is declining, they're coming in and building all these mosques. So you have lots of Muslims who are perfectly happy to come in and say, fine, you're not interested in Christianity. That's okay. And there's something like 6,000 mosques being built in Europe right as we speak.
So, Dawkins, what do you think about the decline of Christianity yeah, exactly. now that you cheered so...
Are you all that in favor of it now?
Yes, because you're going to lose British culture.
Yes.
And is that cool? Well, yeah. Are you cool with that? Well, no, I still want to live in a Christian nation just without all that pesky Christianity.
Yes, that is the attitude.
Right, so what's... And here, give me your Chesterton quote.
Yeah, so the quote goes... And I'm not positive it's Chesterton, but it's when men cease to believe in God, they don't believe nothing, they believe anything.
Right. So there is this God-shaped hole in your heart.
Yeah.
And if you don't fill it with God,
you're going to fill it with some other nonsense.
And you're going there, you know, just reading a story in the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. That's no right-wing
no,
rag.
Not at all.
That environmentalism is a religion.
Yes.
You saw during Flovid, people turned, I don't know what, wokeism into a religion with all of the trappings of confession, getting on their knees,
I know,
asking for forgiveness. Yeah.
The whole LGBTQ plus thing to some extent is
what was a outward appeal has now turned inward, so that identity and narcissism, which are both at the core of transgenderism, me, it becomes the thing that fills the hole.
Right.
So, I would say Nietzsche, you know, was declared that God was dead in the West.
Right. Which but people not don't in, understand.
But not you're right. Not in a new atheist celebrating kind of a way. Like he goes, you know what? I don't know. Maybe he did celebrate it, but he's like, this might not go well. And I'm thinking hyper-nationalism could be a problem, and we get two world wars. So I think he would look around and see the drag queens and the, you know, the porn and the drugs. And he goes, you know what? This transgenderism thing, gotta admit, didn't see that coming, but I'm not surprised.
So there's a quote, I can't remember who this is attributed to. If there's no God, everything is permissible. Yeah. And that is... the practical problem. Now, philosophers will argue with that. They'll say, well, wait a minute, even if there is a God, I've had debates with philosophers about this, even if there is a God, you can't establish moral rules and blah, 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 blah. Okay, fine. Practically speaking, in terms of the way cultures work, in terms of the way people work, if you have some 14-year-old who doesn't believe in God, he's going to cast off moral restraint. That's just the reality.
Right.
And if you have a culture that doesn't believe in God, it's going to cast off moral restraint. Now, the philosophers can say whatever they want.
Yes.
But that's the what really happens in terms of human psychology is that when people don't believe that God is watching them and that there are moral absolutes and that they'll be judged, they just kind of...
Well, how about the Prager...
Yeah.
Show
yeah.
where he referred to a study, which simply it was just like what if you put a quarter in the cup to get a cup of coffee, if you put a set of eyes on the wall, people are more inclined.
It's very funny. I'd read about this study a long time ago, and there have been a bunch of studies where. Let's say you have the snack basket at the office, okay? And the rule is you can take a bag of Doritos, but you got to put a buck in, right?
Yeah.
And usually most people will comply, but some number of people will cheat, okay? If you put anything like a poster or something that has eyeballs on it in the room where the snack basket is, people, the compliance goes up,
right?
Because you feel as if you're being watched.
So the feeling that you're being watched is a net positive.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yeah, and that's just the way we are.
Again, we're kind of talking about the utility of the religion rather than making how solid. The rational arguments for the existence of God are.
Exactly. But those are two terribly different questions.
How about just time-honored tradition? Like, if something has worked for 500 years and some snotty-nosed teenager says, well, who says that's how it is? And you're like, I don't know. I don't know, but that's just how we do it around here.
Yeah.
And it's been working, so we're going to keep doing that.
Okay? How about this? I don't know, but who are you to question?
Yes. And when there's nobody to stand up and say, who are you, when this kid who's never been told otherwise has been told, well, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Parents tell you, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Then you become what? You become a bratty adult who says, well, I know these. There's no rational argument for all of these moral statements. This just comes from some fake, crusty old god and some dingy book written by people in the Bronze Age. None of it matters. And guess what? Did you hear Shapiro? He's like, we're going to touch the stove.
Yes.
We just told you, you don't touch the stove. Well, I'm touching it, and I'll just keep touching it because you can't tell me otherwise.
So I'm going
to
throw...
So what? How badly do you have to get burned before you go, maybe they were right after all.
Yeah, I'm going
to
throw a little bit of a curveball in here in that we blame the Enlightenment a little bit in the sense of the Enlightenment said that if you have to have a reason for everything. But this whole concept of the snotty-nosed 14-year-old saying, you know, who says,
right,
reminds me of Martin Luther. Because because here's Martin Luther coming along with his new...
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because Martin Luther comes along with his new ideas. And one of the reactions to Martin Luther is, Martin, are you alone wise?
Yeah.
You know, are you the only person who understands what's going on?
Right.
Because
I don't have a solid argument against what your claims are,
yeah,
does that make you right?
Yeah.
It's not a bad...
These 10,000 people say this, and you said... And here's the hard thing about that. Sometimes the one guy against the 10,000, sometimes he's right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but there is also the conservative impulse to say, well, wait a minute, 10,000 people are disagreeing with me.
Right.
You know, maybe I should think twice about this.
Right. All right, so back to the touching of the stove.
Yeah.
What are we seeing? I don't know if you saw this thing that's been going around about this 28-year-old woman from the Netherlands who, I don't know, she's become a celebrity because she's about to kill herself.
Oh, yeah.
So we have high suicide and governments now fully participating. In the Netherlands, 5% of the deaths are administered by the government.
Wow.
What does that say about a culture?
Yeah.
I mean, so I thought we were talking about the metaphorical death of the West.
Yeah.
No. This is the literal death. This is we are embracing. Canada is terrible.
Yeah.
Most of Western Europe. I mean, Islam's got to be going, why were we bothering with wars? This is easy.
I know. Just let them destroy themselves.
We'll just walk in, encourage euthanasia and abortion, and sooner or later, this place will be ours.
You know, when John Paul II was in the end of his papacy, and he was clearly suffering and not doing well.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time thinking, you know, it would really be better if he resigned and let somebody else take over. But he hung on and remained in the papacy in a way to fight this very thing. In a way, the message he was trying to send was, no, life is worth living, even in bad situations. Even, you know, I realize I'm not the man that I used to be, you know, that he held on because he wanted to send that message. No, life is good. And
so
even the person who's disabled, who's having a hard time, who's having all these problems, that person is still worthwhile.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't want a kid with Down syndrome, because wouldn't it be crappy to have to live your life with Down syndrome?
They're some of the happiest people I know.
Down syndrome. Right? And bringing most joy to the family.
I know. They're loving people.
When you have... Without the moral authority to say, no, that's wrong, and then you just, like, don't have the option.
Yeah.
You just go,
right.
Guess what? I don't need to reason my way. I'm not going to try to reason my way to drugs are good, pornography is good, euthanasia is good.
Yeah.
There's a set of eyes on me that's telling me that through time-honored tradition, that these things are bad.
Yeah. So imagine the depressed person
And that's all, well. This gal is she's got autism, depression, and I don't know, restless leg syndrome.
Right. So the depressed person goes to two different scenarios, two different worlds. In world A, the depressed person goes in to visit the priest, and the priest says, "No, your life is valuable.
Right.
And you know, your life has meaning. God gave you your life. It's important." And tries to encourage that person. And okay. The second scenario, the person goes to the local government business.
Euthanasia clinic.
Yeah. And they say, "Okay, what's your problems?" Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fill out form 10A. And right.
Yeah, that does sound pretty bad.
Go
to the next booth.
Yeah, and ask for the red pill.
And we'll
take care of it.
We'll schedule you a date, and we'll make it really nice. And she's picking out an urn. So now you've kind of, with this, the fact that we know that she's picking out an urn, and she doesn't want to burden her partner, who she says she loves.
Mm-hmm.
So you have love in your life, and a cat.
Two cats.
But you know, still, it's just not worth living, and you know, and now what? It's being incentivized.
Yeah.
Right. So now you've got some celebrity status. Which is the last thing that all these other moping girls need to see.
Yeah. You know, the government actually should. What they should say. I mean, from a purely practical perspective. If this person has, you know, various health issues and whatever, the government should say, you know, this person isn't going to be producing a lot, and they're going to cost us a lot in national health costs.
Right. Between how much taxes she pays. Right. Just do a chart.
Do a chart.
How much tax is she paying versus what are the costs going to be? Yeah.
We're really better off just
fast track.
Yeah, exactly. We're better off just killing this person.
Is that the culture we want to live in?
No, it's not. It's awful. So Ben Shapiro had an episode that you forwarded to me, and he talked about some things about religion. I just took a couple notes. Religion takes certain things off the table. You know, this is something. Adultery is not something that you're allowed to do. It's off the table. You know, murder is not. Okay, there are certain things that are off the table. Religion provides a social network that shames people into submission. And I would tie this together with religion steps in when you want moral obligations upheld, but you don't want the government enforcing them, right? Like, there are things like, no, you should not be viewing pornography. But do you want the government enforcing that? No, you should not be using the N-word.
Cheating on your wife.
Yeah, but do you want the government enforcing that, right? So that's another thing that religion brings. The Enlightenment was wrong in thinking that everything has to have a rational justification.
Right.
And then the last one was some moral rules were sort of worked out over time, and they've been abstracted to sort of it's almost like developing muscle memory. When you're learning a new skill, you're taking karate or whatever it is, at first you got to learn it all, but then it becomes muscle memory.
Yeah.
There's almost something analogous to that on the moral sphere.
I haven't thought of that. That's good.
Where you learn
just
it.
Reflexively
culture,
that way.
And it just becomes this thing. You don't really know why.
And, right. And when you're within a like-minded culture, then it's always being reinforced. So Jonathan Haidt, our social scientist buddy,
mm-hmm.
has pointed to a lot of problems with cell phones and social media.
Yeah.
And also then pointed out that religious families suffer less from these effects.
Mm-hmm.
And a response from him was like, yeah, because religion gives you a purpose, an established belief system of code of behavior,
mm-hmm.
a community of like-minded individuals,
yeah.
a support system when you need help.
Yeah.
On a practical level, it just gives you healthy alternatives to sitting around on your phone. You're going to church. You got volunteering. You're attending church activities.
Yeah.
You know, even you know you might be missing out on some things in the modern world.
Right.
But you know, there's less exposure to smartphones and social media, and less of the negative effects of those things, the mental illness as associated, because you have all of these other outlets.
Yes. Yes.
Which is, you know, it's.
A long time ago, we did a show on some of the arguments for the existence of God.
Yeah.
And our conclusion was, the arguments are kind of crappy.
They weren't that good?
They really aren't that good. But there's another argument that Dennis Prager likes to make, and it's an argument that has become more and more convincing to me.
And I think that Jordan Peterson is coming to...
Yeah, so the argument goes like this. Without God, everything goes to shit. Right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be observably true in cultures, in individual people. It's just true that without God, things fall apart. Now, does that mean that God is real? I don't know. But maybe it just means God is necessary. But it's an interesting argument that, you know, what we see from the decline of religion is not good.
If you promote religion without believing, is there something cynical and manipulative?
Like the Bene Gesserit?
Like the Bene Gesserit?
Yes, it is cynical and manipulative, but... So there's two. I guess you could look at this.
I find it uncomfortable.
Yes. Me too.
To not be all in on these belief aspect and being all in on the social value aspect.
Yes, it is. It goes on. The Bene Gesserit are these
from
manipulative.
Dune,
are these manipulative women who use religion as a way to promote their agenda and. You think, come on, that's not right. You shouldn't be doing that. But what if?
But not in a selfish and self-serving way.
Yes.
They really do believe that this is going to be for the greater good of humanity.
Yeah.
And let's just say it is. So yeah. Go ahead.
So then, okay. So that's one perspective, the sort of manipulative meddling. Another perspective is you've got some guy. You have Jonathan Haidt becomes the president of the United States. And he's not a believer,
right. Okay?
But he knows the positive impact of religion, so he promotes religion because he realizes it has a good social effect. He's supposed to be the leader of the country, and he realizes this is good for everybody, so fine, I'll encourage church attendance or whatever.
Here, let me give you a couple of names, and you tell me if you think that in their heart of hearts, they're deeply religious people.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan, Rush Limbaugh, George Will,
yeah.
Donald Trump.
No, I don't think any of them are.
Right?
But
they're all pro-church.
Yes, they're all pro-church, and that's a great way of looking at it. I'm not sure. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, was he on his fourth wife when he died?
Yeah. I don't remember him ever. I mean, he supported churches. He
yes.
never talked about church attendance. He
yes.
never talked about his religious faith.
Yes. But he was very pro-church. And Ronald Reagan, too. You know,
yeah,
I'm not sure. I think Bill Clinton went to church far more than Ronald Reagan did. So there is this concept of just the social benefit of religion. And it's dying, and we're seeing the consequences. We're seeing more suicides. We're seeing more mental illness.
Drug use.
We're seeing more drug use.
Did you see the interview with AMLO, the president of Mexico?
Yeah, right.
So mostly BS. I don't believe half of what he said.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't have they have all the drugs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
All the drugs from South America are sitting in Mexico getting ready to come across the border, and they don't have the drug problem that we have.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, because it's church and family, and I mean, granted, the greater the risk, the greater the reward, the
yeah.
drugs are worth more here,
yeah.
but you're telling me that there aren't plenty of people who would be willing to, you know, take less risk and less reward and sell plenty of drugs if the market was there? When Miss Pigweed came here, I've got my liberal college buddies, parties, and, you know, there's some things going on.
Yeah.
And she said she didn't know anybody.
Really?
Who used drugs, who smoked pot.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, all of this came through your country.
I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a point.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, he does have a point.
Well,
and it's sad. It's very sad.
Yeah, and, you know, the Chinese are helping it right along with their own
yeah.
motivation.
Right.
So, you know, there's
something.
There's a hole somewhere in the most prosperous country in the world, or just United States in the West.
Yeah.
What is this hole that we're filling with drugs and porn, etc.? Well, it's the hole left by the exit of religion, I suppose.
And maybe other things too. I mean, I don't want to say that it's all religion, because there's also just family, there's also tradition. You know, if you look at Japan, Japan is not a very religious place.
Right.
But you have much more adherence to certain social rules and norms.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
So I don't want to say that religion is the complete solution here, but it's the decline of religion has been a bad thing. And
yeah, well, you know, Japanese homogeneity has something to do with it. Shared culture.
Yeah.
And there has been no real immigration into the country. I mean, you can get a work visa, but you can't go there and live. Well, guess what? They just decided to slit their own throats, and now they're going to bring in 900,000 immigrants because they're not having any babies. And there's already Muslims tearing down temples.
Are you kidding
me? And throwing tantrums in Japan because it's not welcoming enough to Islam.
Oh my gosh.
So welcome to the West, Japan, and cut your own throat. So yes, so originally the name of this topic was what happens to societies when they lose religion. And then I said, let's just do what happens to the West when it loses Christianity.
Right.
Because otherwise you could just make the argument, well, if Christianity is, if you're just talking about religion broadly, just replace Christianity with Islam and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except
that's not happening.
Except now I'm gonna invite a jihad against myself. Islam is a curse on the planet.
Yes.
Islam is disgusting. And, you know.
Yes. Dawkins is like, if you're gonna make me choose, right? Yes. And I love The Hitch. The Hitch wrote, God is not great. Religion poisons everything it touches.
Yeah.
However, if you pushed him a little bit, his real problem
was with Islam.
Was with Islam.
Yeah, right.
I know. So,
as it
so you know, like my quality of life, this is a quality of living ranking by Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
Does this every year. So what I have, the top 56 cities in the world. If Western Europe and the Anglosphere, meaning England, United States, Canada, mm-hmm. New Zealand, and Australia,
right.
You have Singapore coming in at 29, and you have Tokyo coming in at 50. All 56 of the other top are Western Europe.
Western European. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, or if I would, we just talked about the decline of the Christianity in the West and its negative effects on the West, not exactly going into the toilet just yet.
No, we're living on borrowed capital. We're still benefiting from what our fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers
yes,
did.
And yes. From the Dawkins, I really enjoy living in a Christian nation, even though I don't believe it was. I mean, how about, what is going on here? So we don't even show up until 37.
And then San Francisco?
And it's San Francisco, which I haven't heard anything nice about San Francisco since Flovid hit.
Yeah.
And even Paris, France, they don't show up until 32. How does, as I recall, wasn't Germany bombed into the Stone Age about two generations ago, and they have three of the top 10 cities in the world?
They're doing something right.
Yeah. So, I'm getting a little off topic here because I just found that list very good. But it also shows that, all right, the West is not in the toilet just yet, but it is in decline along with.
And we're all these cities are probably importing more and more Muslims, which is a cancer that's going to come in and destroy them before too long.
Did you see Putin and his massive deportation of Muslims?
Right.
He's like, we don't need minorities. Minorities need Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't behave, you get the hell out.
Yeah.
What is so? What? Why is? Why is that a difficult?
No. You can't say anything good about Putin because he's the devil.
Besides, yes, I don't mean to accuse of the pro-Putin channel, but what is? Let's forget it's Putin. What's wrong with just the idea that we are allowing you into our country and we want you to make a contribution and we want you to behave, and if you can't, you gotta go.
Right.
Well,
But how could any country not do that?
Not do that. Yeah. Well, everybody in the West, for example. So, let's wrap this up with you giving a few words of optimism and encouragement.
Okay, a few words of optimism and encouragement. I would say that there seems to be a movement, an intellectual movement, away from the idea that the Enlightenment process of, everything has to have a cause and we have to understand things scientifically. There seems to be a little bit of a movement away from that. And that might lead towards a reinvigoration of the concept of faith and tradition and...
dare you say revival?
Maybe. So I think our country is doomed without a religious revival. Now, I'm not saying that I want to go to the Baptist church where they handle snakes, but I would rather go to the Baptist church where they handle snakes than go to the mosque.
Or the trans rally.
Yes, exactly. Give me the snake. Right. I'm not going to go to the trans rally. But so I do think that there needs to be a revival. I don't see any... I don't see any good signs of that. I don't see any increase in. There's not any great church leaders arising. There's no
Billy Graham.
There's no Billy Graham. There's no George Whitfield or Jonathan Edwards or any. There's nothing like that on the horizon. But that's what we need.
Well, I'll accept that as encouragement and optimism.
Cheers. Thanks so much for listening to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Remember to visit us at pigweedandcrowhill.com or send us an email at pigweedshow@gmail.com.